Sergeant Benton could remember having better days. As he fidgeted on his stiff and rather uncomfortable chair in the packed conference hall, digging his fingers into the collar of his shirt, as though exposing another inch of his neck might compensate for the inadequacies of the air conditioning, the hectic events of the last 24 hours were still swirling around in his unsettled mind. It had begun in mundane fashion, arriving in Unit HQ as usual, and, in the absence of any meaningful duties, busying himself by supervising Corporal Hastings' team as they effected routine repairs to some of the training apparatus in the northern area of Unit HQ's vast grounds. One moment he was standing there having a light-hearted discussion about the England match as a scramble net was being replaced, and then the proverbial reveille as Sergeant Waring suddenly drove up in a Land Rover, telling him he was wanted in the Brigadier's office immediately. Benton was promptly whisked off. He'd arrived on the scene to find the brig evidently in a bit of a flap, pacing around and not in the best of humour. Also there, knowing better than to try their commanding officer's patience with any glib comments, was Captain Yates, standing attentively like the fellow schoolboy who had just been summoned to the headmaster's office. It turned out, as the bristling brigadier informed them, that there was an important event shortly due to take place in Hong Kong, a scientific demonstration of some sort. With some difficulty, UNIT had managed to acquire passes for two people to attend, and naturally their scientific advisor, the doctor, and his assistant, Miss Grant, had been scheduled to go. But it seemed the pair were suddenly and unexpectedly no longer available. As the brigadier succinctly put it, "He's disappeared in that blasted police box again." The brigadier had therefore asked Yates to attend in the doctor's place, and Yates had kindly nominated Sergeant Benton as his preferred fellow traveller. Benton therefore found himself hurled into a mad rush to get home, grab his passport, pack together some things, and get to Heathrow to make the 1320 flight to Hong Kong. It was a long flight, but the case full of briefing papers to read through had meant little time for relaxation. Although Benton could never quite shake that feeling of inferiority whenever he was around the public school types, Mike Yates at least was a superior officer he liked and got along with. Throughout the flight, however, Yates had been uncharacteristically cold and indifferent. At first, Benton assumed the captain was just peeved with the manner of their being dispatched on this mission by the brigadier, but a chance remark by Yates that he had been all set to go out onto the West End with Joe before she vanished with the doctor made the truth plain to see. He was sulking because his date had stood him up. The subject wasn't raised again. Sergeant Benton had faced numerous dangers in his time, from armies of cybermen to living gargoyles, but the landing at Kai Tak Airport was as hair-raising as any of those experiences, and their plane barely missed crops of skyscrapers as it banked and descended to a runway that led straight into a harbour. Mercifully, the brakes held firm, stopping the plane on the tarmac just metres from a grey, watery grave. The overcast sky that greeted them in Hong Kong was similar to the one they'd left behind in Heathrow hours before, but the climate here was hot and humid and did not make the taxi ride to the hotel a comfortable one, particularly when heavy traffic frustrated their progress through hectic Kowloon and across onto Hong Kong Island, through the Chung Wang district where their hotel awaited. Watching through the vehicle's window, Benton was struck by an impression of an aging, claustrophobic place, of crumbling concrete buildings towering upwards to block the light out of the packed, narrow streets in which they stood. The many people hurried this way and that, all with dour faces, and only the myriad of neon signs in Chinese lettering added much-needed colour to the panorama. Their hotel, while not the most spacious he'd ever been in, was at least luxurious on the inside, and they were greeted by the most charming and beautiful young Chinese lady who had a willing young porter take their cases and escort them to the sixth floor rooms. That gave Benton barely 2 hours to unpack, shower, shave, change clothes, and quickly look over the briefing papers once again before he and Captain Yates were to convene in the hotel's conference area, ready for the special event they had come to attend. The lounge area was swarming with business types of many different nationalities. Benton rarely felt comfortable with mingling with such company, or when wrapped up in a formal suit, but the sight of a well-stocked bar at least cheered him a little. Momentarily. Best not indulge, Sergeant. Yates must have read his mind. Don't forget, we're on duty. So now here they were, seated in the hotel's conference hall, amongst an audience of maybe 300 or 400, the atmosphere buzzing with anticipation as to what this scientist, Dr. Lim Yong, was going to announce to them all. There had been a lot of technical and scientific detail in the briefing papers, but so far as Benton had been able to digest, Yong was a noted scientist who had been quiet in recent years, but who was known to have been working on cloning techniques. With him calling a conference like this, it was hoped, perhaps even assumed, that he was ready to announce a breakthrough. Benton just hoped that he wouldn't be required to report all the explanation back to the Brigadier or the Doctor, as his own scientific know-how extended to little more than knowing how to light a Bunsen burner. Excited chatter gave way to deathly hush as a diminutive, smart figure appeared from the curtains of the stage area and introduced Dr. Yong. A steady, polite applause broke out. Benton saw the man taking to the stage and recognised him at once from his briefing pact. Lean, tall, and slightly stooped, bespectacled with generally classic Oriental features, a slightly jutting chin with a receding hairline which accentuated a wise, domed forehead. Benton couldn't help but try to spot the nick of flesh that was missing from the scientist's left earlobe, an accident with a parrot, the report had said, but the injury wasn't obvious from this distance.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you.
Dr. Yong began in English that betrayed only the slightest Asian lilt.
I have invited you to this demonstration in anticipation of my latest paper, which will see publication within the next month and which I hope will be the subject of great interest around the world. As many of you will already be aware, I have spent many years heading research into the possibility of cloning organisms. Debate into the ethics of such research must be reserved for another time and place. However, I am convinced that this field of science is our best hope for overcoming the food shortages that our race will doubtless face in the years to come. I am a firm believer that actions speak louder than words, and so, without further ado, I would like to show you the results of my recent experiments. Ladies and gentlemen, prepare yourselves, for you are going to see something that nobody outside of my select team of researchers has laid eyes on in over 300 years.
Excited murmuring filled the air as Dr. Yong nodded to one of his assistants, and the huge curtains parted to reveal a backstage area resembling a small laboratory where several white-coated staff stood around a workbench, upon which sat a large box with a crimson velvet cover draped over it. Benton glanced at Yates, who gave a little shrug.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dr. Yong continued, after being helped into a lab coat by one of his assistants,
I give you the dodo.
There were astonished gasps from all corners of the room as Yong whipped off the corner to reveal the transparent frontage of the large box, through which could clearly be seen a startled, twitching creature sporting colourful plumage and a distinctive curved beak. Benton was just one of many in the audience who instinctively rose from his chair to behold this incredible sight. A camera was wheeled towards the bird, enabling it to be seen in close-up on the projector screen, just to the right of the stage area, though the image was a little faint due to the room not being dark enough. There was no mistaking the bird, however, with its fat belly, its tiny wings, and its nervous, blinking eyes.
Now I've seen everything,
Benton muttered, slowly sinking back into his chair.
The dodo, of course, was native to Mauritius, but was driven to extinction in the 17th century following man's colonization of the island.
Dr. Yong was now struggling to be heard above the hubbub of excitement.
The DNA has, however, survived in fossils, allowing this miracle to take place. Ladies and gentlemen, today I could have shown you 500 specimens cloned from one rabbit, but what would be remarkable is showing you 500 rabbits. Far better, I think, to show you a living example of a creature that died out hundreds of years ago.
There was a short burst of spontaneous applause before questions flew at the beaming scientist. Some of these he dodged, others he was happy to answer for a few minutes, but quite soon it became clear that he was tired of the cross-examining, and Yong then went into another speech, outlining in scientific jargon something of the processes he had used to bring the dodo to life, before he then concluded his presentation with a rather long statement about how his work was still very much in its infancy, and with a desperate plea for sponsors without which he claimed his work would not be able to continue. Waving away further questions, Yong and his team covered the dodo back up. The curtains were closed and the items started to get tidied away. The audience, still reeling, rose and transferred back to the lounge area in excited little cliques. "So what do you make of all that?" asked Yates. "Do you reckon the thing was real? I mean, it wasn't some illusion or conjuring trick, was it?" "I wondered about that too," Yates confided. "The man's clearly anxious for funding. What lengths might he go to in order to secure some fake success, perhaps? The thing looked real enough, but then again, well, none of us has ever seen a real dodo before, so how could we be certain? Perhaps it was some other bird disguised. Well, with all respect, Captain, he might be able to fool you and I, but what about the experts in the room? I bet most of them know their stuff." "Yes, that's one thing that's bothering me," Yates replied in a low voice, peering across the room towards the exit doors at the rear, where there was some congestion as the various delegates filed out. "We're not the only guests here who lack a scientific or media background." "Hey?" Sergeant Benton was puzzled by the remark. Yates nodded towards the cluster headed out the doors. "Over there, that group all dressed in black, two of the men wearing dark glasses. You see the girl with them?" Benton followed his gaze and was drawn to a slender Chinese female, immaculately dressed in a crisp trouser suit that was as black as the silky flow of hair that cascaded down her back. Her flawless skin was almost porcelain white, her eyes dark and full of mystery. She was very beautiful, yet hers was an aloof, cold beauty. "Sun Yi Li," Yates continued his hushed explanation. "She's one of China's top agents, cool, efficient, and very deadly. She commanded the crack squad that stole the Z-57 warplane plans from the US a few years ago. We've also got sensitive intelligence that suggests she was involved in the disappearance of the South Korean Secretary General." "So, not the sort of person who's got interest in dodos," Benton said with a rub of his chin, wondering if she had a gun concealed on that lithe body of hers as it slunk out of the conference hall. "Not a bit of it," said Yates. "Come on, Sergeant, we'd best get moving." The pair left the conference suite and made straight to Yates's room, where they set up the satellite telephone, which they had brought over with them, and called Unit HQ back in England. Through the small speaker system, both men could hear the other end of the line. Though it was very crackly, the voice that answered was unmistakably that of Corporal Bell. "This is Phobos 1, Phobos 1 calling Jupiter." Yates spoke the call sign into the microphone. "I've got an urgent message for Greyhound 1, security code red." In a moment, the familiar clipped tones of the Brigadier crackled back at them.
"Yes, Yates, what is it?"
Captain Yates quickly relayed a summary of the information in measured matter-of-fact tones.
"What?"
the Brigadier interrupted. "A dodo, sir," Yates repeated and continued his story. He then described how he had spotted Sun Yi Li among the delegates at the event. The Brigadier seemed to know who she was, and his voice became grave.
"Right, Yates, stay where you are. I'll call you back in a few minutes."
There was just time for several minutes' quiet contemplation and pacing around the small room before the Brigadier got back to them.
"It's just as I thought,"
the Brigadier said.
"I've checked our most recent intelligence files. China has been trying to coerce Dr. Lim Yong to work exclusively for them. Up until then, he seems to have resisted their overtures, but Sun Yi Li's presence suggests the Chinese may be making a renewed attempt, and quite possibly through force. You have firearms?"
"Well, yes, sir, but surely we don't want to risk an international incident," said Yates.
"Captain Yates, I've no need to tell you the possible consequences should Dr. Young's work fall into communist hands,"
the Brigadier countered. "There are just the two of us," Yates protested.
"The two of you will have to manage,"
the Brigadier told him bluntly.
"Dr. Young's safety is to be given top priority. Over and out."
Yates set down the microphone and huffed, giving Benton a resigned look. Then he checked himself, straightening up. "Well, you heard the Brigadier, Sergeant." Benton reacted instinctively to the sharpened tone of voice and stood at once to attention, clicking his heels together. "Sir, we're clearly going to have to watch Dr. Young around the clock until everybody leaves here. I'll take responsibility for the interior of the hotel," Yates told him. "I'll need you to keep an eye on things outside. It's possible Sun Yi Li might call in additional bodies, so you need to be vigilant for anything suspicious. We'll keep in constant communication by walkie-talkie. I'm relying on you to inform me immediately if anyone turns up, or if you see any activity that might put anyone here in jeopardy. So, Benton clicked his heels again. Well, get to it then, Yates added. And when Benton checked, he was relieved to see the captain had an amused smile on his face. Before too long, Benton was changed into more comfortable casual gear and was down in the murky concrete environments of the hotel's underground car park, running his fingers across the shiny surface of a navy blue Jaguar, purring with delight. One of the real perks of working for UNIT was the magnificent cars he got to drive. Jags were among his very favourites, so he was especially pleased that Yates had managed to acquire one as their hire car for the duration of their short stay in Hong Kong. The sleek bodywork was a joy to behold, and Benton found himself thinking, not for the first time in recent years, that if he hadn't become a soldier, he might well have found himself a job involving motor vehicles. His thoughts were interrupted by the crackle of his walkie-talkie.
Greyhound 1 to Greyhound 2, be receiving me.
Greyhound 2 receiving you loud and clear. Benton spoke into the device. I'm down in the car park. All clear here, so not a soul about. Over.
Good work, Sergeant. I've had a look around the hotel's leisure areas. There's not a sign of Lee or her colleagues. I'm currently on floor 3, where Dr. Young is staying. Nobody about. Over.
Well, that's reassuring, I suppose. Over. Benton mused.
I don't know. Somehow things don't feel right. Too quiet. Check back in about 15 minutes. Greyhound 1, over and out.
Benton pocketed the walkie-talkie, patted the semi-automatic pistol in his pocket for reassurance, and mooched around admiring the various cars for several minutes, nothing to be heard in the huge, dimly lit chamber except for the echo of his own footsteps. He then took the staircase up to the street level where the air had cooled somewhat and the bright, multicoloured neon signs were coming into their own. Now the daylight was beginning to fade. There was no less activity than earlier in the day as people, trams and cars competed for every inch of space. But nothing caught Benton's eye that troubled him. The stoic commissioner maintained a calm vigil outside the hotel's impressive entrance, but nobody was arriving or leaving.
Greyhound 2, come in.
The walkie-talkie crackled again. Benton quickly ducked into an alcove and answered, Greyhound 2, receiving you, over.
Things might be moving.
Yates said, urgently.
The lift suddenly became very active and now seemed to have gone off altogether. I ducked into the stairwell and could hear a lot of people descending from the upper floors. I've gone down a floor just for the moment where they won't see me. Stand by, over.
Benton was inclined to draw his gun, but there were already one or two curious looks being directed at him from passers-by, and he didn't want to attract further attention. His eyes darted around as he hurriedly wondered what action to take. The street was too busy for a getaway car to roll up and be able to race away at a moment's notice. Any escape was likely to be via the underground car park, out into the side street, and then onto the highway, he concluded. So he quickly ran back over and down into the parking area.
Benton! Benton!
Yates's desperate voice crackled from the radio once he was down there.
There's about six
There was lots of distortion over the line, various muffled noises that sounded like Yates was on the move. Also what sounded like lots of coughing.
They got gas grenades, think of anything. To try and...
There was more coughing, more distortion, and then the unmistakable sound of gunshots.
Mike!
Benton yelled into the walkie-talkie, but there was no longer any transmission coming from his colleague's device. Biting his lip and just about curbing his desire to rush up to the third floor and assess his friend and captain, Benton instead squeezed himself between two of the parked cars where he had a good vantage point of the exit to the stairwell. Beads of sweat formed on his brow as he waited, tense, for the possible arrival of Lee's team. It was not a long wait. The deafening silence suddenly erupted into noise as the swinging doors to the stairwell clattered open and a group of small, nimble figures clad in black cat suits and gas masks rushed in. Lee herself was at the head of the group. Two were carrying the unconscious but familiar form of Dr. Young. Benton trained his gun on them.
Hold it!
He yelled out, the deafening echo of his voice taking even himself by surprise. He was hoping the group would freeze, if only in momentary shock, but instantly scattered among the parked vehicles. Benton fired a couple of warning shots, but then there was another loud crack, and the surface of the car alongside him pinged as a return shot. whistle just past him. He ducked down, wondering how he got himself into such situations, and more shots right at the bubble. The wing mirror of the car behind him exploded so close that some of its shards showered. There was a sudden roar of an engine, a screech of tires, a black limousine drawn up near Lee's group. Benton tried to work out how one of the agents could have got to the car so quickly, then mentally chided himself. The driver must have been waiting in the car all along, and if Benton had been a little more vigilant earlier on, he might have spotted him and been able to effect a more proactive solution to the current predicament. He chanced a quick glance over the bonnet of his cover, just managing to see the inert Dr. Young being bundled into the back of the limo before another brace of shots had him ducking back down again. There was excited chatter in some eastern tongue, and the slam of car doors, and then another screech and roar as the vehicle sped off the ramp towards street level. Again, Benton bobbed his head up. Thankfully, no marksman appeared to have stayed behind to pick him off. He ran out and took a couple of shots at the retreating limo, hoping to hit the tyre, but he was unsuccessful. Cursing, he then ran to the Jaguar, hurriedly fumbling for his keys. The seconds he took to get into the car and start it up felt like an eternity, and he raced out of the exit in hot pursuit, still worried as to the possible fate of Captain Gibbs. There was no sign of the black limo when Benton reached street level, but if it hoped to make swift progress, then the highway was the only realistic option. So he turned left and made off in that direction. Sure enough, the limo soon came back into view, though it was some way distant now and travelling at speed. Benton leant back into his seat, relaxed his arms and slammed his foot down on the accelerator, feeling a strange sense of satisfaction. This was the sort of game he liked now, not engaging in a risky shootout, but participating in a high-speed chase. He felt more at ease driving a car than firing guns. The Chinese agents couldn't know for certain that he had the means to follow them, but they would be taking no chances. He glanced at his speedometer, where the needle was already twitching past 60, and increased the pressure on his accelerator, his eyes intent on his prey. He was now overtaking the other cars on the highway with ease, and was slowly reducing the limo's lead. For a brief moment, he wondered how differently the situation would have played out if the Doctor and Joe had been able to travel to Hong Kong as originally intended, and had a wry smile to himself as he imagined the Doctor's yellow vintage car, Bessie, chasing along after the limo. But Bessie was full of surprises, Benton had discovered, but given a jag over that little vehicle any day. He kept the enemy vehicle firmly in his sights, but stayed a good 400 metres or so behind it. There was little he could do whilst they were in motion. Trying to force the limo off the road might only endanger Dr. Young. They were heading somewhere and he had to stop sometime. He just needed to be around the right place and time and hope he would be in a position to take some kind of advantage. The slow, groggy voice of Mike Yates suddenly spewed from the walkie-talkie. Relieved, Benton fumbled within his jacket and pulled out the communicator and answered.
"I'm all right,"
Yates told him.
"I've not long regained consciousness. Some of these mob gas, the floor. They must have just let me sleep, but they've got away with Dr. Young. Where are you?"
Benton explained that he was in pursuit of them and that there was still hope of him foiling the kidnap. Yates wished him luck and said he was going to be busy assisting the police, who were now there at the hotel in large numbers, but he asked him to keep in touch. Benton felt a new surge of energy now he knew his colleague was safe, but he still felt the burden on his shoulders. He, and he alone, was the only thing standing in the way of the Chinese kidnapping one of the world's top scientists. After another 10 minutes, Benton tensed as he saw the limo taking a turn off from the highway. He followed, trying to further reduce the distance between them, but not so quickly that they would become suspicious or take fright. The limo negotiated a couple of roundabouts, then took a lonely stretch of road, cutting along a long, flat stretch of grass. The area seemed deserted, and Benton wondered what his enemy's objective was. But then he saw it, a large, hulking helicopter swooping down from overhead. Muttering an expletive, he increased his speed, knowing he had to catch the limo in time. In the distance ahead of him, it had already stopped, and he could see the tiny black figures emerging from it as the helicopter loomed over them like some giant bird of prey. He could see the whites of their faces as they spotted him. There was a little scattering, and then the group began to board the helicopter. He had to stop them. Benton's windscreen shattered as shots were fired at him. Luckily, the bullet went through the passenger side of the Jaguar, but now that he was under a direct attack once more, and with his visibility hampered by the shattered windscreen, he had no choice but to swing the vehicle to the side of the truck, bring it to a screeching halt. He snatched up the gun, kicked open the door, and rolled out onto the grass as more shots blazed around him. For a few moments he lay there, his head buried in his hands, before a pungent smell invaded his senses. Petrol fumes. He looked up and saw a pool of liquid rapidly forming underneath his Jaguar. The car was liable to explode at any moment and take him with it if he hung around. With no option but to break cover, he took to his feet once more and ran, away from the car and away from the direction of the Chinese. No surprise that another volley of shots rang out. He actually felt the rush of air on his cheek, as one bullet must have just missed him, and saw other shots impacting onto the ground all around him. The roar of the helicopter grew louder, the intensity of the shots increased. As he ran, he dared a glance over his shoulder. The helicopter was swooping right towards him. There was no sign of any of the agents on the ground now, so they must have all been aboard it, Dr. Yong also. The Chinese had their captive now, and they could just fly away if they wanted to. But no, it seemed that wasn't enough to satisfy them. They wanted him dead, too. Guessing that this was where it was all about to end, Benton stopped running and turned to face his executioners. A marksman in the swooping helicopter was firing wildly from a machine gun. Benton quaked in agony and collapsed, gripping his right arm where a bullet cut right through. But the Chinese had miscalculated. As it came in for the kill, the helicopter was just above the Jaguar, and the car exploded. Thick orange and black clouds stretched upwards and engulfed the chopper. Benton just about heard terrified screams over the roaring engines before the helicopter itself also blew up, crashing down onto the ground. Even from his distance, Benton could feel the prickle of heat on his face as he watched the mass of metal collapse in on itself as it burned, thick smoke making the air unpleasant to inhale. No people were visible within the inferno. There was no possibility that any of the occupants could have survived. Benton lay there, taking in the devastating sight, gasping to get his breath back and reflecting on everything that had happened and searching his soul for answers. Could he have done anything differently? Was it all his fault that they had perished? Finally, his arm still hurting and moist with blood, Sergeant Benton staggered to his feet. Deflated, he swept his hair back, blew out his cheeks, and wondered how he was going to tell Captain Yates the bad news.
I thought the Brigadier took it quite well, all things considered,
Yates mused as they waited to check out the hotel reception desk, their packed cases beside them. Benton wasn't entirely convinced by Yates' attempt at cheeriness. They both knew that they'd failed, and felt disappointment at not coming up to the standards they set themselves, let alone whatever expectations the Brigadier may have had. Of course, they were bound to face a rollicking when they got back to England, and an insistence that this would never have happened if the Doctor had been there. Sergeant Benton's only consoling thought, apart from the fact that his bullet wound had turned out not to be very serious, was that as the senior officer, Captain Yates would be the one to bear the brunt of the Brigadier's wrath. Yates checked his watch, which made Benton do the same. Even though their flight home wasn't due to depart for another 3 hours, he was still feeling twitchy. The sooner they could check out, the sooner they could be on their way, but the hotel clerk seemed to be taking his time with the other guest, who was just checking out ahead of them. As Benton watched to try and fathom what was taking so long, he was suddenly struck by the appearance of the hotel guest. There was nothing familiar about his long white hair, or his thick whiskers, or the heavy, rather shabby clothing he was swamped in. But even though the man's wide-brimmed hat was pulled down tightly over his head, it didn't hide a little nick of flesh that was missing from the man's earlobe. Benton frowned, then grew more excited as he took in the man's jutting chin and his tall, slightly stooped figure. He shook Yates, nodding towards the mysterious hotel guest. Yates merely responded with bafflement. As the guest turned away from the desk, transactions concluded, Benton led Yates over to him. Dr. Young, I presume? Benton addressed the man, who visibly stiffened. The man slowly turned and faced them, his features a mask of dread.
Good Lord, Benton, you're right. It is him,
said Yates. Young quickly hushed him.
Please, gentlemen, I beg you, do not give me away,
he hissed. Yates privately ushered them into a quiet corner so they could converse in private. Now that Benton could see him close up, it was clear the doctor was wearing false hair.
Dr. Young, you were kidnapped by the Chinese. We were sure you'd been killed. We just spent 4 days assisting the authorities into the inquest over your death. Let me go on my way. For the sake of the whole world, let me continue my research in peace.
Young continued to protest.
But how on earth did you manage to escape?
Benton was flummoxed.
Dr. Young, I assure you, we've no wish to hinder you,
Yates went on.
But surely we deserve some sort of explanation. We risked our lives to try and protect you. Look, we're members of UNIT, the United Nations Intelligence Task Force. Like you, we're not acting in the interests of just one country, but of all countries.
UNIT? Oh, why, yes, I have heard of you.
Dr. Young visibly relaxed a little and nodded.
I greatly admire the work you do.
Benton handed the scientist a card.
Look, here's our contact details. We're not here to cause trouble for you, Dr. Young, but if you ever need help, give us a call. I'm sure UNIT would be very interested in helping to sponsor your research. We've also got a scientist of our own who I'm sure you'd have some enlightening discussions with, Yates added.
Yes, maybe. Well, if you'll excuse me.
Young grunted, shuffled nervously, and then headed for the door. Just before he reached it, however, he stopped and turned. He looked at the pair of them thoughtfully and then came back over.
You really would let me go on my way, wouldn't you?
He smiled warmly and shook their hands.
Yes, I shall be in touch. You are people I can trust and work with. Thank you. You couldn't have survived that helicopter explosion, Dr. Young. I saw you kidnapped and taken aboard it.
Benton pressed again. Young tapped the side of his nose.
The Chinese, they took the wrong man.
Noticing the bemused looks, he continued.
There was a lot I did not disclose during my presentation. My clones, alas, are far from perfected. Whilst I can produce one fairly quickly using accelerated growth techniques, unfortunately, they do not survive very long. Never more than a few hours, sometimes only a matter of minutes. The dodo you saw in the presentation had already died before the last person left the conference hall.
But it was a real dodo,
Yates asked.
Of course,
Young answered sternly as if affronted.
What I also did not reveal was that I have already experimented with cloning of human beings. I knew when I came here there was likely to be an attempt to assassinate me or kidnap me, so a clone came in useful as the most convincing of decoys. So that wasn't really you in your hotel room at all. It was a cloned copy of you. That's who the Chinese kidnapped,
said Yates. Young winked.
Yes. A living creature identical to me, but with the mind of a baby. It too would soon have died from organ failure, so our Chinese friends have been wasting their time in any case. Now they think I am dead, and that leaves me free to continue my work in peace. Now, gentlemen.
He shook their hands once again.
It is time for me to depart.
Benton and Yates watched as the man slipped away quietly from the hotel lobby.
Well, I suppose that lets us off the hook somewhat,
Yates mused.
The Brigadier won't be too upset with us now.
Sergeant Benton chuckled. I dare say that, like Dr. Young, he'll be quite beside himself.